Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for coming. As our man said, I'm from here today from USDA ARS in Maricopa, Arizona, and I'm going to be talking about a couple different technologies that we are using to study crop growth responses that have typically been studied separately. But what my aim is to do is to try to figure out ways to merge them together. The first being remote sensing, which is a very important tool for spatial analysis of crop growth. However, when we think about using remote sensing for reliable temporal studying of crops, we run into several problems, such as cloud cover or availability of flights, or availability of appropriate acquisition systems for data. We've run into several limitations. On the other hand, we also have a different tool in crop systems models, which simulate the processes of crop growth on a daily time step. So the temporal problem goes away. However, when we think about trying to extend models on a spatial scale, we run into the problem of the parameter requirements. It requires many parameters to define all of the conditions of the field. And so the thought is that if we can find ways to merge these technologies together, then the strengths of one might offset the weaknesses of the other. There may be several applications where this might be beneficial, including regional basis or regional applications of crop monitoring or yield forecasting in instances of precision farming, precision crop management, and efforts to map evapotranspiration on a regional basis. So this merging of remote sensing with crop systems models is termed as data assimilation. There are several ways to do it that have been developed. One very common way is to simply update the model. We have an estimate of some quantity from remote sensing during the season, and we use that quantity to overwrite the particular state variable of the model that it's estimating. Another approach is to recalibrate the model, where we use an optimization procedure to adjust the model parameters in order to minimize error between remote sensing quantities and that simulated by the model. So the objective of my presentation here is to describe my effort to develop and test an assimilation approach that's based on updating the leaf area index state variable of the series wheat crop model using estimates of leaf area index that have been estimated from remote sensing. The experimental data for the work comes from a set of two irrigation scheduling experiments that were conducted at Maricopa, Arizona. I'm going to focus today particularly on the wheat experiments that were conducted in the winters of 2003 and 2004 and 2004 and 2005. The objective of these experiments were somewhat different than my objective now. the experiments were conducted with the objective of using remote sensing to help guide irrigation management. And so there's two scheduling approaches that are used in the experiment, both based on FAO 56 procedures, but one where the crop coefficient for FAO 56 is determined from standard methods, and second, where that crop coefficient is determined from remote sensing. And then we have subtreatments of plant population and nitrogen rate in order to get some variability in crop growth responses across the field. Here's a quick diagram of the experimental setup, where again we have the main treatment being a crop coefficient obtained from standard FAO 56 methods, and secondly, where crop coefficient is obtained from remote sensing data. There were three plant populations across the field and two different total nitrogen application rates. So there was a lot of data collected in association with these experiments, which is very helpful in the parameterization and calibration of crop models. For instance, to characterize the water balance, we have measurements of soil moisture in each individual plot with measured with TDR probes down to 30 centimeters and neutron probes down to about 3 meters. So we have detailed measurements of the water balance on like a weekly or more basis throughout the season. We've characterized the nitrogen balance a little bit. Extensive measurements to document wheat growth, including weekly measurements using the Zadok scale for wheat on development. And we have twice per month collected biomass samples, and by dissecting those samples have obtained measurements of leaf mass, stem mass, spike mass, grain mass for all of these different treatments. Leaf number was also collected, and using an area meter, we obtained a measurement for a green leaf area index from the plant samples. We've characterized the soils at the site. We've characterized the meteorology at the site, so we have all of the information necessary to run a crop systems model. But the icing on the cake for this experimental data set is that we also have remote sensing data that was collected for purposes of irrigation scheduling. The data that we have include weekly measurements with a handheld radiometer, an Exotech radiometer, that collects reflectance information in the red and near-infrared regions. And we also have, on a monthly basis, some airborne imaging. So to proceed with our effort to pursue data assimilation, the first thing that I did was to estimate the leaf area index from the spectral reflectance measurements. I did that by first computing the NDVI, the Common Vegetation Index, and from there, using the method described by Chowdhury, I go from the NDVI measurements to an estimate of LAI. It requires the maximum NDVI for full cover, the minimum NDVI collected over a bare soil situation. Instantaneous NDVI on each measurement date will give you the fractional canopy cover. And that value is used then in a second equation along with parameters that describe leaf angle distributions and such to give you leaf area index. The second tool, a crop systems model, which I have reported in previous talks about how I've used the data from these experiments to fully evaluate that model. And then to carry on further, I have updated or have modified that model so that it could accept these estimates of leaf area index throughout the growing season as an update to the leaf area index state variable of the model. We expect this to improve simulations or to affect the simulation because the leaf area index state variable is important for both the crop growth aspect and the water balance aspect of the simulation. Leaf area index affects the biomass accumulation mainly through the computation for intercepted photosynthetically active radiation, which is accomplished with this equation. Intercepted PAR is a function of leaf area index. That intercepted PAR is then used in the equation to calculate the amount of carbon that's assimilated by the plants on a daily time step. And as for the water balance, the leaf area index state variable is used in the computation of evapotranspiration. I'm using the particular ET calculation technique in the model that uses FAO 56 methods, and so it's kind of a crop coefficient approach where this crop coefficient KC is computed as a function of leaf area index. That crop coefficient is then used along with the reference evapotranspiration to compute potential evapotranspiration for the simulation. So two approaches that I've used to do the assimilation procedure. One based on updating, where I simply just overwrite the leaf area index state variable on the date where I have remote sensing estimates of leaf area index. A second approach is a forcing method, where I interpolate between the leaf area index state variables and then update the model on a daily time step. So the plot here shows an example of that where the points represent the estimates of leaf area index as determined from remote sensing. The solid line is the model-only simulation of leaf area index. And then, of course, when we do the updating or the assimilation procedure, then we force the model to track the leaf area index as estimated with remote sensing. So how does this affect the simulation? I must say that the results that I show will be in addition to fully calibrating the model. So I've adjusted all these parameters the best that I can do to get the model to fit our experimental data, and then using the assimilation approaches is then further improvement beyond what I can do by hand. What I found was that after a full calibration, the model really tended to underestimate the above ground biomass, particularly for the FSH treatment, which is the sparse population, high nitrogen rate treatment. So when we do the data assimilation then, which is the dotted line here, we see that what happens is the model is better able to simulate above ground biomass as measured at the site. And it's interesting to think about these results in light of the fact that in most cases, in most ways that we want to try to apply these models, we're not going to have the extensive data sets that I had in this experiment to do the model calibration, to make sure that all these model outputs are responding appropriately. And so we want to think about how the model can respond better in light of cases where we don't have as much information, and therefore we have more uncertainty in the parameters. So what I've done is looked at four parameters. These are parameters that govern the potential leaf area growth and potential leaf mass growth in the model. I reduced those by 10, 15, and 20%, just as an example. And what we see that when we do the model-only simulation, that reducing these potential leaf growth parameters has the effect of reducing the total above-ground biomass simulation. However, when we do the data assimilation with remote sensing, then we're always adjusting the model right on in terms of what was measured for above-ground biomass. I have to say that the results for crop yield were not as encouraging. We do have some encouraging results for the 2003-2004 season, where for the FSH treatment, I guess what I'm showing here is the yield measurement in the dark. The model-only simulation of yield is the horizontal, and then these diagonal ones are the results of the two assimilation approaches. So for FSH treatment, we see that the assimilation approaches are bumping yield in the appropriate directions compared to measured. Likewise for FDH, we over-simulated yield slightly, and the assimilation procedure bumps the yield down. However, for the 2004-2005 season, the results were not very encouraging, where we see that for most of the treatments, like especially for FSH, FSL here, that the model did pretty good on its own, and when we did the assimilation, we kind of bumped the yield out of range. I guess what I would attribute that to is the fact that I used this season for model calibration, and so I may be overfitting the model by my adjustments during this season. In addition to that, yield is determined by other factors besides leaf area index. We have the partitioning that occurs after we simulate the total above ground biomass, so that has an effect, and also yield is also affected by other parameters such as those that define the kernel set and the seed size. So it could be there's other factors in the model that this particular assimilation approach is not adjusting for. But I did have an encouraging result as with regard to the ET. This is again for the fully calibrated model, and doing the assimilation represents further improvements beyond that. For the 2003-2004 season, we're bumping the ET simulation in the appropriate direction for FSH, FTH, FDH treatments. Likewise, for the 2004-2005 season, we see that the assimilation approach is bumping the simulation of ET in the appropriate direction for all except FDL. So in summary, I have an extensive data set collected for wheat in Maricopa, Arizona. I've used that data set to evaluate the series wheat model, and then have taken that forward in order to test assimilation approaches and how remote sensing could be used to improve simulations of these crop systems models. So with that, I'll conclude.